Married with Children, the podcast, hosted by Dustin and Callie. Follow us on social media, on Twitter, at @married_show, Facebook, Married with Children Show, on Instagram, Married with Children Show, or reach out to us in an email, marriedwithchildrenshow@gmail.com. We're always looking for guests and sponsors. If you have a name of a guest that would be an interesting interview on the Married with Children Show, please send that information to us through social media or straight to our email address. Also, if you have a small business that you'd be interested in being a sponsor on the show, please reach out to us through an email so that we can work out a way that best suits you and our listeners. Also, if you like the podcast, be willing to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Welcome back to Married with Children. Started off here with some technical difficulties, but I think we are good now and going to roll here. So sorry to anybody that on the Facebook live feed that jumped on the first one and then had to come back to us. But we're going to talk some soccer today, something a little bit different. But before we get into it, I want to introduce the room, and then I got a couple things off the soccer topic that I want to bring up. But obviously, as always, I have my beautiful wife, Callie, in the studio with me. How are you, Callie?
Doing good. Feeding Alex right now. So anybody watching or when you're listening, if you hear like a burp or, you know, me patting, it's...
It could be me or Alex.
Yeah, either or.
And then Taylor Shaw with us here today, big soccer fan, and reached out and said, hey, let's talk a little World Cup. And I said, hey, I know nothing about it, so let's do it. So welcome to the studio, Taylor.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on.
So before we get into that, I got two topics I want to talk about. And first of all, I'm going to do a movie review because Callie and I Friday got to go to the movies, and we went and saw...
Like the first time in...
A long time.
I mean, a long time, yeah.
And crazy enough, I signed...
I guess first time in a long time that if it's not a...
Children's
animated
movie. Yes. So we didn't take Alan too, but
Married with Children, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And crazy enough, I signed up for this whole movie pass thing now, and
I heard about that. Yeah.
I'm gonna see. I don't know if it'll, but $9.95 a month, and you can go to as many. You go to one movie a day.
I was shocked.
I wish they had that when I was back in my 20s, and I'd have seen every movie that was ever in the theaters.
Yeah.
But so I'm gonna give that a shot and see if I can see some more. But we went and saw Ocean's 8.
Nice.
And I'll be honest, I took a nap through part of it.
He really did. I may have had to bump him a couple times.
Yeah, she was kind of worried that I was going to start snoring. It was okay. I think I went in with way too much expectation. I'd give it like a 2.5 out of 5. I mean, I love the Ocean's 11. And
yeah, those are great movies.
And even going back, I love the original with Sinatra and the Rat Pack and Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin and those guys. And this one just, it was okay, but it played too much on everything that we've seen before. So
yeah, that's what I said is that, and that was my fear, is that it was like the girl version of Ocean's 11. And I mean, it was, I think there were too many parallels. I mean, I don't know, just like similar type characters, you know, that kind of thing. So
they
almost tried
to like carbon copy it.
Yeah.
I mean, it
was kind of like a remake. You know how like a lot of times whenever they do like the sequel and it's not as good as the first. I mean, it was kind of like that it was like, oh, okay. I mean, it was okay. But
my big argument with it too was the greatest thing about, like, you go back to the original Ocean's 11 where they're going to rob the casino, they really broke down technically how they were going to do it. And that was always the cool part of, like, this is how we're going to pull it off. I felt like this one was a lot more about, like, the relationships of the ladies involved. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, poof, they pulled off this great heist. And I'm like, how in the heck did you do it?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. And maybe, and honestly, maybe I missed it in the middle when I took a nap. But
that may be true.
Yeah, that's probably a good point.
But it was not my favorite. So, you know, I wanted to throw that out there. And then, you know, everybody... Most people know that I do another podcast called Throttled Up that focuses on dirt track racing. And
I just want to throw out, you know, my condolences to the Johnson family. Jason Johnson, 41 years old, World of Outlaws sprint car driver, had an accident last night at Beaver Dam Raceway in Wisconsin, was killed. You know, Jason was one of those guys that that just epitomized competition and excitement, and was, you know, he ran on his front of his car. He was the raging Cajun, exciting guy. So, you know, condolences to the Johnson family. It's tough after just a few years ago losing Brian Clausen and then seeing Jason pass on. I saw a great tweet today, though, and I wish I could give credit to it, but somebody said, can you imagine the wing sprint car race is going on in heaven right now with Brian Clausen and Jason Johnson up there together. And you know, that's a pretty special deal. But listen to Throttled Up this week. We're gonna talk a little bit more about Jason, but I just wanted to throw that out here, too, because pretty tough morning to hear that he didn't make it through that crash. But we do have Taylor Shaw here with us today, and Taylor and I have a little bit of a background, too. Taylor, you were a senior in 2009, or fall of 2009, when I came to Jennings County, and I was coaching football, and you played football, obviously, and played defense for me. You know, that's kind of where our friendship, our relationship kind of started, and then
absolutely.
You came back and coached for me for a while mm-hmm. while I was coaching, and we've just... You know, your group has a special place in my heart, and you guys have always kind of been around and kept up with me, and I appreciate you wanting to come here to the podcast.
Absolutely. Funny story. I was actually thinking about this when I was about to drive here. The first time, so you and Bunin got hired together.
Yep.
And I was a senior, and the first time you guys actually met me, like, here you are. These are the two new hires for the football team. You guys walk into the gym. It was a basketball game. You walk into the gym with probably AD. Whoa, oh, gosh.
Mike Broughton.
Broughton. Yes, Broughton. Thank you. You walk in and they say, hey, here's your new football coach, Taylor Shaw. He's a defensive starter, you know, introducing you guys. And here I am. Wearing Jennings County High School cheerleading. I was a cheerleader. You met your starting safety corner on his cheerleading duties. That was great. I'll never forget that, like how odd that is.
Like, what are they thinking right yeah. now?
Like, I'm sure Bunin and Roller at that time were like, what did we get ourselves into? our defensive starters are cheerleading.
Hey, but you know what? It worked out because you proved to us that, and that was a fun group to coach. I mean, especially on the defensive side. I kind of got all the old guys and right. the seniors, and you guys all played defense for me, which I still laugh at Bunin because he put a 24-year-old defensive coordinator with a bunch of seniors, and we had a lot of fun. And it, like I said, that group's always been pretty special to me. So, you know, it's been fun. But I do want to ask you this before we get into some soccer talk, mm-hmm. because you played football in high school. I know you played baseball as well.
Yep.
Multi-sport guy, but football's getting beat up pretty hard right now with the head injuries and the concerns. What are your thoughts? What do you think? If you could go back now and play again, would you still play?
That is a loaded question, honestly. It's tough. Every day that you're on the football field, now I think you think about, this could be my last day on the football field.
Mm-hmm.
When I was playing, we didn't think about that. That narrative wasn't there. The news wasn't covering like it covers it now. So that wasn't that thought. I'd have to say I would, just because of the experience it gave me, the lessons I learned from football, go beyond just, you know, learning on the field stuff. It a lot of off field lessons were learned in my football journey. But yeah, I say I would. I would play, and even with the knowledge I know now. And I think football, yes, it's taking a hit. It's going to survive because I think our country is just smart enough technologically. with helmets. We can improve it. You can always improve it. And then we just got to get better. And I think this is a big part of it too, not with just equipment and safety issues, but we have to get better as, you know, a football nation of educating our coaches. We have to do that because, I mean, I didn't have much experience, and like I was allowed to coach, and you know, playing, I did teach the right way how to tackle, but some coaches are picked up off the street, and mm-hmm. especially youth coaches that don't know.
Right,
we have to crack down on that and be able to teach everyone who's teaching our kids how to play football. I think that is a big important step that we have to take.
And I agree with you, and I really appreciate your answer, and I knew I was throwing a loaded question at you, and it's it's one that I've been asked several times, even from my own mother, to say, you know, I've got a four-year-old right now, and she's asked me, in the next 2 years, will you let him play? And I have to be honest that in 5-6 years, that may change as more studies come out and more information, mm-hmm. but if you nailed me to the wall right now and said, is he going to play, I would say yes. Now, the beauty I have is that I've now stepped away from my coaching experience, and it allows me the opportunity to be involved in coaching with him. And not that I think I was the greatest coach ever. I don't believe that, but I have that knowledge. I've studied the correct ways to tackle. I've put that time in. So for me to be his youth coach, I would feel comfortable with that. But it is, man. It is tough. And you know, what I've seen a great shift in our coaches, and kudos to those high school coaches that are pushing that. When I played, you know, 15, 20 years ago, it was all about toughness. It didn't matter if you tackled right, if you hurt. It was just, if you got a stinger, it was just, you need to be tougher, man. You needed to play through things. And you know, this whole idea of just how tough could you be, that we finally moved away from that, and we finally have started having conversations about proper ways to do things. And,
absolutely.
You know, and doing things the right way. And I agree with you, though. Like I said, I would let Alan play right now because it is, and you have to be involved in it to understand it. There is no other sport like football. And I've said this before because
it's true.
You can get beat by 50 in a basketball game, and you wake up Saturday morning, you go play again.
Mm-hmm.
You get your rear end handed to you in a football game. You wake up Saturday morning, you don't walk right for 2 or 3 days.
It doesn't feel good.
and that's what it is. And it's about a brotherhood. And it's about, you know, in basketball, you can have a LeBron James that can take over and do things. You can have, you know, a great pitcher in baseball and win a lot of games behind a great pitcher. In football, you have to have 11 guys. I mean, it doesn't matter. You got to play it together. So I know I kind of got us off topic there a little bit, but I wanted to throw it out to you because you are a former player of mine, and I wanted to know kind of where you were at with that because it is a hot-button issue right now.
No, it's a big deal. And I think where the game has gone, I think our kids, our even high school-age kids, they're – in any sport, I feel like they're more focused now on how to take care of their bodies and how to work out properly and what it takes to be at the best peak performance they can get to, which is awesome to see people taking care of their bodies and mm-hmm. taking pride in that. So that's another thing that mm-hmm. I think will help is I think the kids will care too of how to do the right things.
Well, and I agree with you. I mean, the nutrition that's at the high school level now, it's unbelievable.
It's insane.
When I was in high school, we didn't talk anything about nutrition.
No.
You just went to McDonald's and ate everything you could.
They fed us pizza.
Yeah. So the idea of figuring out what is, I mean, it is really trickled down from, you know, pro athletes to the college and the, you know, the tables and nutritionists there to the high school level, and it's huge.
It's great.
So, all right, let's get into some soccer talk. Like I said, I don't know much other than this year, for the first time, I did buy the FIFA game, and I've been playing a lot of FIFA.
That's where it all started for me.
It is. Honestly, I never thought I could get as interested in it as what I have playing FIFA because it is it's a lot of fun. I just actually played through the whole World Cup with Brazil and made it. I lost. I actually lost on penalty kicks in the championship. Yeah. And it was because I had never played penalty kicks on FIFA before, and I didn't know how to make my goalie dive.
Yeah, he was like, I don't know how to dive in this thing.
Left and right analog.
I finally figured it out, but it was too late.
Yeah, it was on like the fifth kick or something. Yeah, you finally figured it out. out.
Germany beat me. So, but before we get into this year's World Cup, what is it, first of all? Let's talk about the U.S. is not there. I know you just said you had to wear your France jersey tonight because the U.S. isn't there. What's the problem with U.S. men's soccer? The women have been extremely successful. Yep. What's wrong with U.S. men's soccer?
That's a tough question. That's another loaded question.
I'm good at those.
Yeah, he is.
And I don't even... There wasn't technically, like, this big overwhelming problem. It was, and this is just an example of kind of where I see it and what, where the issue really started, why we're not playing this year's World Cup. The World Cup, you know, is the senior men's team tournament. The Olympics is actually an under 23 tournament. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people actually know that. And if you look at our Olympics, we've actually missed the previous two. And the Olympics runs on a four-year cycle. So our senior team players...
Are that group that missed the Olympics twice?
Well, they started when they were playing. They were so good, and they are still good. They started playing at when they're like... 20, 21, 19, that age range, and they've carried our team because they are talented players. They've carried us, and our federation got a little just content. They're like, okay, this team's going to take us for a long time. They're going to be able to carry us.
Right.
Now, that younger group, though, I feel got forgotten about, and they haven't qualified for those previous two Olympics. Now, guess what players...
Now, they're the older ones.
Guess what players should be pushing that older generation out?
Right.
They're not good enough.
They're not there.
Interesting. Wow.
It's literally, you can do the math on it. 4 + 4 = 8. So they've missed a 10-year generation. And now those 20-year-olds who are great, now they're, you know, 35, 30. They can't do it anymore, right? They're getting older, and that
because they're playing against guys. I mean, from the other countries that are going to be what, probably 25. I mean, so are going to be in their low to mid 20s,
exactly.
You know, or whatever. So I mean, again, they're, I mean, just age wise, I would think would kill
time just caught up with the federation, and they didn't prepare for it. They didn't push that younger generation to push those players out because they were so good. And we just kind of forgot about them. Now, that is a player standpoint. The bigger issues lie within the federation. Like, we never had a GM. We had the coach and then the president of the U.S. Soccer Federation. And those two men just ran the show. And to run that big of a show in terms of, like, the scouting of players, what formation you're going to run, what style of play you're going to play with, that was all decided by two people. And so you had to, you know, worry about who's going to be our technical director. And that was a hired position, but you had, like, the technical director, head coach, and other than that, you were pretty slim on your resources. So they finally added a GM, which is a great move because they can take care of the business side, and then the head coach now can worry about coaching, strategy, style of play, you know, statistics and, you know, analytics and all that stuff. But they finally hired a GM, and I think that's going to help split some what am I trying to say?
Responsibilities.
Thank you. Split some responsibilities to allow, you know, another higher position to make sure we don't miss a 10-year gap anymore.
Wow.
And, you know, it amazes me, and this has always kind of interested me about U.S. soccer especially, because, and this isn't me being, you know, cocky about the United States, but I won't say we dominate, but we compete in every sport worldwide.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we can compete, but we have always struggled to put together a really competitive men's soccer team. Yep. And I mean, and I know the basketball was kind of our first sport, and you know, but even baseball, we can compete on the world stage with American players. Now, we are starting to fall back from that a little bit, and the world has caught up. The world's caught up with us in basketball too. But we have always struggled to really put together a competitive men's soccer team. And you know, and I think part of it is you see some of the greats. I mean, I know they talk about Odell Beckham Jr., the wide receiver for the Giants, that he could have been one of the next soccer stars, but chose to go the football route. And I think that's a tough thing for some of our athletes, too, is the fact that the money maybe isn't there the way it is in baseball, basketball, and football.
And the viewership.
Oh, yeah.
And that plays a part in it. But I think we're seeing that shift. I know it sucks to say, but with the, you know, concussion issue with football, now a lot of people are starting to go that route. But the other thing is with the viewership we have now, used to be you couldn't find soccer on TV.
Yeah.
Now it's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's on, like in the fall where the Premier League is playing in London, it's on from 9 a.m. until 2 p.m. So it's just, we're able to view it. Our local league, MLS, is on TV everywhere now. So being able to see it, being able to watch it, that is getting more kids to play.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So you're starting to see the numbers rise.
Yeah, and I think it's something that I think over time you will definitely see even an increase in those, the best athletes playing soccer and being a part of that. And it's not only just getting them to play, it's retaining them in that sport and continuing them beyond. So
yeah, because I mean, I played as a child.
I did too.
But like, I obviously didn't stick with it.
Well, and you know, I figured out real quick that soccer is not a sport for a chubby kid. I was a heck of a lot better in 5 to 10 second plays than in constant running back and forth.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So I moved away, but you bring up a you know, a good point, because knowing you as an athlete the way I do, you would have been a great soccer player.
I you know, not to sound cocky, but I agree. Finesse, speed.
Obviously you didn't, because you played football, so you didn't play soccer or anything. Did you play like in elementary, I mean like the elementary leagues?
Yeah, so like I told him, like as a youth, yes, I played like one season, and I my parents said I just wasn't like crazy about it.
Right.
But now it's so weird that I am crazy about it. It's like my number one sport now. But yeah, and I think that's the thing. Like when I was a kid, I saw the football on the TV. I saw basketball on the TV.
Yeah.
Saw baseball on the TV. So that I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And now,
well,
you're,
I mean, because
it,
you associate too, you know, I mean, of course everybody dreams of being a pro athlete, you know, and that kind of thing. It's like, well, I mean, if I'm going to be a pro athlete, I'm going to be one of those three sports.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really think of being a pro athlete in some of those other sports.
Well, how long has the MLS even been around?
So that's the other thing. It's it just celebrated its 20th anniversary
ago. Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, there was no Major League Soccer.
Gotcha.
Exactly. So like, it's a very new league, and that league itself has just leaps and bounds exceeded the expectations people had for it.
And, you know, I think it's again, going back to kind of what you talked about, the crazy thing for me, just talking about from a football perspective, as a football coach, is, and I've told Callie this, the perfect scenario for me with my two boys would be they play soccer until they're a freshman in high school, and then they choose to be a football player. And even when I was head coach, I said if I knew I could send every kid to play soccer until their freshman year, and I could still convince them to jump to football, I would have done it, because the footwork, the conditioning, you know, the finesse it takes. And people, again, going back to how football has changed, football is no longer line up in a box and just try and hit people.
Yeah.
It is a finesse game.
Yes.
It is, even for linemen, it's about footwork. It's about ability to move. And so I would love if I could have kids play soccer all the way up until their freshman year. The problem is you don't usually steal them back at that.
Yeah, not when you get to that age. They can play for a few years, you know, when they're little. But again, once they get to middle school or something, usually you don't
That'd
get them
tough.
Back. Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you, and you kind of answered a little bit earlier, but what – How did this soccer obsession start for you, man? Because you were you were the all-American boy of football, baseball, you know? I mean, so how did – and not that soccer's not all-American, but it really – especially in the community you grew up in.
Yeah, yeah.
It really wasn't. So how did you jump on this soccer deal?
Well, I like I said, when you brought up FIFA, that's kind of where this all, like, jumped. I played it a few times, and I was like, oh, wow, like, this is – this is really entertaining, really cool. But it was a video game. Like, it, you know, I wasn't like watching at that point. And then I was, so like, I'd played FIFA a few times, like just going into college. And I was home on one of the college breaks. And it was like, you know, 11 p.m. at night. And, you know, the parents are asleep. I'm bored at home, like, just trying to find something to watch on the TV. Now, the West Coast, obviously, it's like 8 o'clock there.
Yeah.
So I find a MLS game, which at that time, even, what was that, 6 years ago, I guess? Even at that time, soccer was still hard to find on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I end up catching this, like, West Coast MLS game. And it was, like, in the 80th minute, and it was tied at the time I was watching, like, 2-2. One team scores a goal to take the lead in, like, the 85th. The other team, like, answers in the 90th, and then one of the teams in extra time, like 92nd or 93rd, scored a goal to win it. And I was just, like, blown away. I was like, this is really fun. This is cool. Why, like, I've been missing this. Like, that's awesome.
Right.
So, like, that happened, and then, you know, I played more FIFA, and then it started out, like, international fandom. Like, the U.S., when they play, I was, like, all in. But I never, like, got behind a club like MLS or the Premier League. But then as I started watching the international game, those players, you know, who play internationally belong to a club.
Right.
So I started becoming, like, Clint Dempsey was my guy. And I noticed that he was in England playing on, like, the biggest level ever, and I did not know that. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. So I became, like, a Tottenham fan. He played for Tottenham Hotspurs. Cool name, by the way.
That is a cool name.
Tottenham Hotspur. So, like, I followed him at Tottenham and opened my eyes to the Premier League. And here I am now. I wake up at 8 a.m., you know, make a Bloody Mary and watch watch the Premier League games at 8 or 9 a.m. until 2. And
too funny.
Now I'm, you know, a big MLS fan, and FC Cincinnati just got their MLS team.
Oh, cool.
So they're going to start next year, and, like, I'm a big MLS fan. And but, yeah, it basically all started with the video game, and it just, like, trickled. And now I watch it more than football, baseball, basketball.
Really?
Anything. Yeah.
I will say this, because, again, I did buy the FIFA game this year, and I really don't even know why. I guess I actually bought it because – she actually took me to an Indy Fuel game, hockey game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I came home, and I was kind of bored with I mean, Madden had been, that was in March, so Madden I was kind of over.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And the NBA 2K I was kind of over. So I was like, I'm going to buy the NHL game. So I started playing the NHL game, and it was good.
I liked it.
And then I found FIFA, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to try this because I'm looking for something new. But the coolest thing is I had good buddies in college that were from Anderson that all played soccer, mm-hmm. and I was kind of the odd man out as a football guy, and they would watch it, and what bothered me is I could never figure out what was going on. So I couldn't get excited. Like, I know when I watch football and a guy breaks a post corner and I know that he's going to be open if the ball's I am anticipating and getting excited.
True.
I know when I watch baseball and a guy throws a fastball and it doesn't hit the spot he wants to, I can get excited that I know something big's getting ready to happen. I can get that anticipation. I never could do that in soccer. The cool thing that FIFA has done for me is, even though I'm awful at it, I am so awful at it. I won't even try to play online because it just I would get destroyed. But I'm starting to see some of that stuff of how they set up goals, how they, you know, how they try to set up things to score that I never understood. I mean, to me, it was just guys running around
kicking
all over the
ball.
Place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I never understood. So I'm starting to get a little bit more of that and understanding.
Yeah. It's a sport that obviously in high school, like I never gave it a shot. And like, I think our soccer team and football team had this like odd duel too. Like, we didn't like each other.
Oh, really?
Which I don't understand it now because we all like each other now. But we had this weird thing, and I like hated soccer because of it. And now it's just so funny because, and everybody laughs about it. They're like, what happened to you? you go to college yeah. and you just
come back this
happened?
Like huge soccer fan.
Yeah. But it, and like my father-in-law calls me soccer mom. I was just like, come on. But yeah,
you didn't pull up in a minivan. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
There was no minivan in the driveway, but yeah. No, but it's cool, man. And this is, to be honest, that's a big reason why we kind of wanted to start this thing, because, and it's been the cool thing for me is I've always been one that's interested in learning new things and, mm-hmm. and hearing about new things. And doing this podcast, we've had a lot of people on that they're teaching me things and, right. and I'm learning. And it's so interesting to me to see new things. So I think it's really cool that you kind of, you know, you've broadened your horizons a little mm-hmm. bit and stepped outside. So, well, let's jump into this year's actual tournament. Yep. And before we kind of get into it, let's talk about how the whole tournament is structured, because it starts in pool play.
True.
And then obviously it goes into an actual tournament. But how do you qualify? Because obviously the U.S. didn't even qualify. How do you qualify? Right.
So qualifying is like the longest process ever. It takes so long. So when the World Cup is basically done, World Cup qualifying will start probably like within a year, but it takes so long to qualify because you have to go through so many steps to get to the World Cup. So you have
and
to.
And is it every 2 years the World Cup's
four.
Play? Four. It is four. 4 years too.
4 years. So, for example, we are part of the CONCACAF region, the FIFA regions, and they're broken up into all these like weird names, like we're CONCACAF, there's CONMEBOL, crazy stuff. But you have to go through and play like USA, Mexico, Costa Rica, Honduras, all the Central America, and the North American teams. So you have to get through that group stage before you can even get to the World Cup. And since it is international and you don't always have your players because they're playing with their clubs,
right,
it extends the process. So it literally takes, you know, three and a half years to finish the qualifying process. But you do have to, you know, play throughout these regions, and the top, is it the top of, I think CONCACAF, for example, gets, I think, three teams.
Okay.
And it's based off, like, how many teams are in that region.
Right.
I think, like, the European base, they get, like, five or six, mm-hmm. you know. But it's how big yours is. And then we go through, there's, like, one step of qualifying in CONCACAF, and then it's called the hexagonal, where there, it just moves on to the eight teams, and then those teams have to fight it out to get those World Cup spots. And so it's a very long process, and it takes a while. So it's,
is it whenever they do that, is it like a series, or like when they're playing those teams? I mean, is it kind of like a round robin type thing? They just kind of play each other.
Yeah, they play each other, and it's just put on a table like every other soccer thing. So like, you know, you get 3 points for a win. You get 1 point for a tie, and then no points for a loss. And, you know, goals for and goals allowed come into play when, you know, if two teams are at 6 points, you know, then they can go to, like, goals scored and, you know, stuff like that. So
okay.
it's a long process.
Any idea how many are in the USA's group?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I'm just curious.
I don't know. Do you have that capability?
Yep. I'm pulling it up right now.
Okay.
CONCACAF region teams, I think, will get you what you're looking for.
Okay.
I want to say 12.
Okay. That's what I'm... I didn't know if there was, like... I know you said you thought, like, top three. I didn't know if there was 10 or 20 or... I was just curious. Yeah, yeah.
35 teams.
Oh, boy. Oh. See, I was so wrong. But so you got to go through those 35.
So that is, I mean,
and it takes a process because the last step is, we call it the hexagonal, and I'm sure other regions call it different,
right?
Their own names. But when you get to that hexagonal, you know, you have to go through those 35 teams that are already right. gone, and then you start your
interesting okay.
group, and then wow. from that group you go to the World Cup.
Yeah, and it is, I mean, it is a group of obviously Central America and Northern America mainly, but mm-hmm. I mean, you've got everything, you know, Puerto Rico,
yep.
St. Lucia,
right.
Cayman yep. Islands, U.S. Virgin Islands.
Wow.
Trinidad, Turks and Caicos.
Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah.
I mean, Cuba, Aruba. Cuba.
Yep.
Wow. El Salvador. Okay. So, I mean, it is.
There's a ton of those, you know, those countries
those
in Central
countries,
Central America.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they all get a shot. That's the thing about it. They all get an equal shot. It's just those teams never... I mean, they don't have the numbers, they don't have
yeah,
the structure,
yeah.
they don't have the facilities,
absolutely.
But everybody okay. gets a fair shot at it. So, yeah, I mean, it's a long process, it's a cool process, and it is good that everyone gets their shot. But, yeah, it takes forever. But that is how you qualify. And, unfortunately, the United States got to the, I keep referring to the hexagonal stage, they got to the hexagonal, and they just absolutely blew it. They put themselves in a very bad starting position of losing a couple games. I went to the USA Mexico game in Columbus, Ohio, and that was one of the World Cup qualifying games.
Oh, really?
And we had never lost in Columbus to Mexico ever. And of course, the one game I go to, we lose.
Yeah.
So we started off very poorly. Lost two games, I think, to start it, and we made a really strong push those next few games, and we put ourselves in a pretty good spot. And it came down to literally, we just kicked the crap out of Panama in Orlando, and then the next game was a Trinidad and Tobago matchup. All we had to do was go down there and tie to qualify for the World Cup, and we got beat 2-1.
Really?
That was like one of the saddest days of my life.
I'm sure.
Like, I was like crushed because like 2010 World Cup, I was just like a recent fan.
Well, that's what I was thinking is like, this is probably, you say it's every 4 years,
yeah.
is like the one where you're like really pretty into it.
Yeah,
you know
it
what I mean?
It was like my most involved, I think. Like 2010, I was just becoming a fan of soccer. And like, it was more, like I said, the international game was, mm-hmm. was like what I was interested in.
Right.
And like 14, I was a big soccer fan at that point, and I was involved, but I was like really looking forward to that next one, like in 2018, because I am just like a soccer freak now, and I say this all the time when I talk about it. That game was in October of 17, where we lost to Trinidad and Tobago and didn't qualify. I got married that week.
Oh my gosh.
So like I'm happy I got married because it like took my mind off off the World Cup, not qualifying for the World Cup.
Right.
I was like so devastated, but I was like, "Well, I got to get married. I got shit. I got stuff to do." So, like,
well, and it's, you know, the funny thing is, like I said earlier, I will say that the women's team has hooked me every year in the World Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, I am like, as much as I'm not a true soccer fan, I'm a diehard. I mean, I want to watch mm-hmm. every women's game when it's on. And it's interesting to me, and I'm sure I'll catch some flack for saying this, but typically, and it's not that I don't think women can do anything that a man can do, but like I will choose the NBA over the WNBA. I would choose baseball over
right.
softball if I was going to watch it. But when it comes to this, the women's team's awesome. Now, the thing that is lost for me, and that's why I would really be excited to see the U.S. men's be back in the World Cup now that I'm more interested in it. The women's, they don't follow up the way the international men's game does or the MLS men's game does. So I see these women every 4 years, and then they kind of disappear
right.
off
right,
into the sunset. So there's nothing to hook me back
yeah,
in.
The women's league structure is not really there. We have the biggest league probably is it. And this is how much I don't know about women's soccer is I think our home league is probably the biggest.
Yeah, I would agree.
That's my guess. And they're not, I mean, it's hard to catch a game on TV for the NWSL.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You just don't see it that often.
And that's what has kind of kept me from, I think, really becoming a soccer fan. I think if I hooked on the men's team and they were competitive, I think that would definitely excite me. So
they're coming. They're coming.
I'm going to buy in with you.
They're coming. I strongly believe that. So that old guard, those players I was talking about, they have pretty much officially been eliminated, you know, from any other World Cup because this was their shot. Now they're old. 4 years from now,
yeah,
they're done.
They're really old.
They're done. And so now with us knowing... missing the World Cup was kind of like a blessing in disguise. I hate it, and I hate that we're not there, but it changed a lot of stuff. As soon as we didn't qualify...
It was like they had to get their crap together.
Yeah,
it's like, we've got to figure out what's going on.
The Federation president stepped down. They completely restructured it, got a new president, hired that GM. The coach is gone. But now they're able to, like, focus on that younger generation.
Yeah.
And they've played a few, like, friendlies, and you can take friendlies with a grain of salt. Like, they don't matter. Right.
No, it's like a scrimmage.
Like a preseason
football.
Game, yeah.
Yeah.
You want to learn something, but you're not showing everything you have.
Exactly.
You're holding back.
Exactly.
I mean,
and they played a few friendlies against, like, France, and I don't even know who the other one was, some random country that wasn't that great. But with that being said, this younger generation that did get the chance to play, they looked dangerously good. And they're only like 19, 18, 20 years old. Like, they're good. I'm excited for them.
Very cool. So let's get into it now. I mean, we talked about qualifying. Then we go into pool play.
Yep.
And how many transfer out of pool play to the knockout?
So you get your top two out of every single group.
So you've got, and there's what, five groups?
Eight groups, I believe.
Eight groups, okay.
Should be.
And so you're playing in pool play. You play every team in your group. There's four teams in each group, correct?
Four teams each group.
You just play each other once?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then round robin.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with the points. You know, you get 3 points for a win, 1 point for a tie.
Gotcha.
And then that's how you're ranked. And obviously it can go to goals for, goals against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But then the Saturday, June 30th, is when the knockout stage will start.
Oh, okay.
And then it becomes a single elimination tournament, correct?
Right. Yeah, that's when you lose, you go home. Simple as that.
Yeah.
And the group plays cool. There is like, so if there is a tie, so like right now, I pulled the groups all up on my phone. So right now, like Russia and Uruguay they're tied at six. So Russia, when they played Saudi Arabia, you'll notice they were up like 3-0 probably, and everybody, you would think, like, okay, back off, just chill, like, finish the game without anybody getting hurt. The cool thing about group play is Russia piled it on
because they want to score. Yeah,
they did it intentionally because if they knew, you know, let's say Russia and Uruguay, they win out, they get a better seeding in the tournament play if they're technically in first of the group.
Right.
So they could technically, they'll be tied with Uruguay, but how many goals they score,
absolutely,
they'll get a better seeding in the tournament.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool, too, because that's, you know, kind of going back to college football to compare it to back when it was truly, you know, the BCS and all that kind of stuff. Teams went out to go set a, you know, to prove a point.
Yeah.
They would just pile
it on
because it helped in the computer rating. So kind of the same thing here. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And then in Group B, you've got Spain and Portugal at the top of that group right now. And those two are tied as well.
Yep.
France and Denmark at the top of Group C. Croatia and Nigeria at the top of Group D.
Group D is the story of the tournament.
Argentina being at the absolute bottom is just unbelievable. I mean, I don't know that much about it, but
but when you have the arguably best player in the world on your team, you figure they'd probably do all right. And he's not showing up. The team's not showing up. The Federation's in shambles. They got their own issues worse than America, but
it's wild. Even when you just look, and I understand they've got, you know, one tie and one loss, but their goal differential's -3. I mean,
exactly.
That is huge
that
for
hurts.
Argentina.
That hurts a lot.
And it just, I agree with you. You know, you talk about, you know, Messi and that whole deal down there, and then for them to just totally fall on their face. I mean, I hate to say this, but it's almost better to be the U.S. and just be out of sight, out
right,
of mind.
Right, right. Well, and because now, like, you can, I mean, like, you talk about how long the process is and obviously all of this. It's like, you did that, you cope from that, and then now it's like, okay, we've got to start moving on for next year. Because they're obviously still playing this year, you know, in the Cup
right.
and that kind of thing. And it's like, now, I mean, they're... I'm sure their mind is like going crazy, but at least now you're kind of able to, the U.S. is able to move on and kind of start focusing
yeah,
on next
absolutely.
Time.
And then in Group E, Brazil and Switzerland are at the top right now, tied, but Brazil has really had an up and down tournament too. I mean, they've,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, they're sitting in first, but it's been a weird tournament for them. For
yeah,
sure.
They haven't ran away.
They haven't been Brazil.
Yes.
By any means.
And then Group F, which I think is probably one of the most interesting groups.
Yes.
You know, Mexico and Germany at the top, but Germany and Sweden right there are tied second and third. So Mexico has really gotten off to a strong start in that group.
I think technically Mexico is pretty much booked, but the Germany's really not in a great spot, honestly.
And they had to save it the other day versus Sweden. I mean,
right,
that,
and that's the shocking thing is, like, you know, they are sitting in second, but they got beat by Mexico, didn't score a goal. They looked really slow, really unorganized against Mexico. Mexico surprisingly tore them apart. And I thought a lot of people probably watching that game, and if you didn't have, like, soccer knowledge, you would say... Probably Mexico got on that counterattack and they just, you know, got lucky and scored a goal. But in all honesty, the entire game, Mexico owned it. Mexico had the possession. They were beating them with speed, and Germany just could not keep up. It was shocking.
Well, and I that's a great point you make, because, you know, again, going back to my what I know so well in being in football is you don't always – every team has a different approach. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know that, you know, some teams' approach, like when you were playing for us and Buning's offense was there, our approach was hold the ball, you know, eat up time of possession, run the football, burn the clock, and keep games close. Other teams, it's score as fast as I can. So, again, same thing in soccer. When you really look at time of possession, it really shows how well a team has played.
Yeah, you can tell a lot from possession, and they do – I don't think they necessarily always do it by time, but they'll do like a 100% split.
Yeah, percentage
of possession.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. So, like, I'd be interested if you could pull it up. See if you can find Mexico's possession stats against Germany.
Let me see what I can find here.
I don't know how quickly you can find that.
There's Germany, Mexico. Let's see.
Because that's probably something that's on the actual stats.
Oh, yeah.
Sheet, usually.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a big thing.
That's a big one. That's like with, you know, with baseball analytics and like football analytics now.
Right.
Like, you hear what they focus on, like,
yeah,
in terms of those sports, and like time of possession is like a really big deal.
That makes sense.
And who knows if you can even find it.
Yeah. I it's not coming up as quickly as I'd hoped.
Yeah, that's fine. But yeah, I mean, like Group F, it's South Korea, unfortunately, I think. Well, not really. I don't know. It's interesting. Germany, and going back to that Germany game, like I said, they're not in a great spot. They're in two. But they just got one of their starting defenders got a red card. And in the tournament, a red card means you're suspended for the next game.
Yeah, that's huge.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's even huge on FIFA, man. That kills me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Because I love the sliding tackle, and I get red cards all the time.
Yeah. So not only, you know, did they honestly escape off a beautiful free kick, which saved them, but now they're going into a crucial game against South Korea without their starting center back. So that's like your starting center back. That's like going into a football game without your starting linebacker, right? Like Okay. Not okay.
No.
Not a good thing.
No, never. And then Group G, England and Belgium have pretty much just ran away with this group. I think they're locked in and currently tied at 6 points apiece, but nobody really giving them much there. And then Group H, interesting because Japan and Senegal sit at the top there with 4 points apiece, and then Colombia right behind them with 3 points left to go.
Group H is other than Poland, you know, they're eliminated today, just happened. It looks like, you know, Group H is pretty wide open.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting. Again, I think that's a cool thing here. Like this week, it's kind of like the bracket busters week in college basketball.
Yeah.
You know, you play some of these games and there's not as much pressure, but for some of these, like Group H, this week's game is going to be make or break, whether you're going on to the knockout round or not.
Absolutely.
So, we're going to get to the knockout round next Saturday is when it's going to start. Yep. I'm going to ask you point blank, who is your favorite right now, seeing what you've seen, who you think is going to pull this out?
Well, like obviously my fan pick, I was riding France. I just like their players. I like their style of play. I like how they play. Now, do I think they'll win? No. They do have a good shot though. They've had a pretty easy group. And I do want them to win, but I don't think they will. And then Germany was kind of for me. They were like my no-brainer. They're going to repeat as World Cup champions, and they've just been absolutely disappointing. But I feel strongly about Portugal. They have Cristiano Ronaldo, but they've just really honestly looked like a team. And Ronaldo does save them in spots, but that's the beauty of having Ronaldo. He scores big goals in big time situations. Big time players make big time plays in big time situations.
Absolutely.
That's Cristiano Ronaldo. That's what he does.
Awesome.
And he's like, he's like Jordan-esque, right?
He's as clutch as they come.
Right. He performs the big moments. But you can't.
I'm going out on a limb, and I don't know anything. My dark horse right now is I think it's Mexico. I think Mexico, and I don't know that they can pull it off and win, but I think when you open pool play with Germany and you get the win you did in the way you did, I think it's kind of spurred them to something that I don't know that they're – I use this analogy when I coached a lot, but I don't know that they even realize that they're playing as well as they do. I think it's one of those deals where sometimes you're too young to realize or too dumb to realize you're playing as well as you do. And I'm not picking on Mexico by that, but
to know the hype of the situation thing.
I think they don't fully realize the opportunity ahead of them, which sometimes is a good thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So I think my dark horse would be Mexico. I think they may shake up some places even in the tournament.
I do. Yeah, they definitely have a shot. You can't count out Russia, obviously. I don't know. They've come in and who knows what's gotten into them, but they look really strong.
Well, they were probably all threatened to be like sent to the gulag.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, like someone, one of my friends texted me and they were like, man, what about Russia? Like, that's wild, right? And I was like, well, I mean, Putin won a American election. He can certainly win a World Cup.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, I mean, I France, Brazil, Portugal. And you know what? I'll just go with who I'm riding with. I'll say France.
All right, I like it.
They haven't lost a game. And they haven't looked insanely convincing yet. But I think with some of your bigger teams, they do. And sometimes it catches up with you. Sometimes they lack a little bit in the group play.
Right.
And it does. You saw Germany. They got beat. But France hasn't been beat. And I think they're going to ride that and take this to the knockout stages. And I think they're really going to surprise some people. But it also helps that your big dogs are kind of kind of struggling, and it opens up the opportunity for France to probably pull one out.
Very, very cool. Well, we are right at about an hour, and it's crazy. Yeah, 53 minutes right now. And so, Tayshaun, I want to say, first of all, you know, thanks for making the trip. It is a drive for you, I know. Yeah. but I appreciate having you on. I appreciate you, you know, teaching us a little bit about soccer. And like I told you, I would love for you to come back after the tournament is done and wrap it up with us and talk to us. And, you know, with you being in Cincinnati now, I'm going to go ahead and do what you're not supposed to do. I'm going to invite myself. when FC Cincy gets going,
yes,
I'm going to invite myself over to go watch a game with you, so I can see it live and maybe learn a little bit more.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. That'd be great. They do play currently, and that's our American structure, you know, is three leagues. So we have MLS, USL, and NASL is the third. They're at the bottom, and they're actually about to disappear. they're about to be done as a league. So it's going to be USL, MLS. They currently play in USL, this FC Cincinnati does. And so they just won their bid to become that next MLS expansion team.
Oh, cool.
So they do currently play in that league, but, like, obviously everyone is super excited
about being in MLS.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I will come over to make a game, because you can return the favor and coach me up a little bit. So
have either of you been to like a big soccer game? Not
no.
like high school.
No. I've been to college soccer. That's the biggest I've ever been to.
Yeah. So I'll tell you just real quick at the end here. I've never seen an atmosphere like I've seen at a soccer game. Like, it is absolutely insane. It beats football tailgating. Like, just blows it out of the water.
Really?
And I'm not afraid to say that.
At me.
At me. But then, like, the in-game atmosphere in terms of, like, the crowd participation.
The passion of the fans is unbelievable.
It's so crazy. So we went to that Columbus game, or Mexico USA game in Columbus, and what the fans do is they meet at I'm part of the American Outlaws, and that's a supporter group that travels with the United States team, and we all meet in one central area, and we march to the stadium together.
Really?
And this looked like a riot. That's what it looked like. It was, like, getting dark. We had flares. The street was shut down. Nobody could drive on it because we were walking down it. And everybody was just going wild. And then we meet up eventually with the Mexico fans doing the same thing. And it was, like, so passionate and so, like, fiery. And, like,
very cool.
It was unlike anything I've ever been to in my life.
That's unreal.
It's crazy. So, obviously, you won't get that at every single soccer game. That was a big one, right? That's like USA Mexico is one of the meccas in terms of rivalries.
Absolutely.
But like FC Cincinnati, they do the same thing with their fans. They all meet at a bar and they march to the stadium, and like it's
a
little
cool.
calmed down, but it's the same concept. It's it's very cool. So I urge everyone to go experience soccer, even if like you don't think you're that interested in the game. The crowd participation and the tailgate and the party is well worth it.
Well, and I'll be honest, going back to that, the Indy Fuel game we went to, that was like one of the coolest things I've ever done.
Because I mean, it sounds like a similar thing, because here these guys are like yelling, and I'm like, really? It was crazy.
I mean, I left there and I told her, I said, man, we need to get like a 6-game package or something to come up here to watch this. And it's the same thing. And I agree with you. No matter what you're into, go experience new things. I mean, that is the coolest thing, is to go experience something. Even if you walk away and you go, you know, man, that wasn't that great. I would rather experience something new and not like it than just do the same old thing every day. So I think it's awesome, man, that you picked up something new and You know, and it kind of bookends our whole story. Like you said earlier, I met you the first as a cheerleader, knowing I was going to coach you. And now I wrap it all up with you coming back, and now you're a soccer fan, even though I coached you in football. That says a lot about what I created in you as a football coach. But no, man, I will tell you this. I am very proud of you as a former coach and who you are and what you've done. Your whole group makes me proud, but I really appreciate you coming down. I wish you and your wife all the best, and I hope to be over there and catch a soccer game with you.
Absolutely. Come on over. Open invitation.
Can I ask a question real quick? And this is one thing that I've always wanted to know. I don't know if you know where I'm going with this.
I don't.
Which is scary. 90 minutes is how long they play.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
Why is it always go longer?
So
I feel like it's always like, I never know when, like in basketball or, there's like the time,
yeah,
I mean, like
always,
the countdown, I just don't know when it ends.
It's always decided. So 90 is your time frame, I guess you would say, 'cause the game doesn't really end there.
Yeah.
But what they do is they take into account when someone stops for injury, how long, like, the goal celebrations are
substitutions. Because the clock doesn't stop
ever.
Right.
Okay,
ball
gotcha.
Out of play.
Gotcha.
So they take all that into account, and like you can tell if it's like a 3-3 game at the end, they add a lot of time because all those goals took up part of that time.
Yes.
So I think the highest I've ever seen is like 6, but they do take into account everything that's happened during the game, and they add a few minutes to basically make up for
it. So is that like posted somewhere to where it's like, I should know, okay, well, it's going to 97
yeah.
minutes.
So when the 90 comes,
yeah,
the assistant referee, I believe who it is holding a clock.
Okay.
And it's decided, by the referees and the governing body
right.
in the stadium somewhere. I don't know where that is. And they just talk down to him and say, hey, this is what's going to be, and he just and it like,
gotcha.
Usually 3-4 minutes, but
I just never knew because I'm always like, man, I thought it was 90, and again, like, I'm a basketball person, so, and football and all that, so it's like I'm always like, I don't know when it ends, like, I just that was always I'm just like, I don't know, I mean, I thought it should have been over, but
I'll be
that,
honest
that
with
makes
you.
Sense
that's not where I thought you were going. I thought you were going to ask him some question about me coaching him or something.
No.
I thought you were looking for dirt.
Like, I've always wondered the whole time thing, and I'm like, well, I'm just curious because I don't know the answer.
Well, I will tell this story on me. One of my favorite coaching pictures ever actually has Taylor in it, and my mom caught it, but it looks a lot worse than what it really was. But I do have my hand on his face mask, and I was I was never a physical coach. Like, I didn't like abuse my players,
right.
But I was on the sideline, and I can still remember the moment. Taylor had gotten down on himself, and I grabbed his face mask, but the picture looks like I'm probably screaming obscenities at him.
Right. No, I know the picture.
What I'm screaming is I believe in
like
you.
Like encouragement. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was not ripping me.
No.
He was trying to get me to like believe in myself.
Yeah.
But I love the picture because, again, it's one of those judgment things. Like, when you look at it, it's like, oh my gosh, this guy looks awful. And I'm like, if you actually know the story, I'm actually like just throwing everything I have behind him because I did believe in him that much, and I wanted him to see that. So that is one of my favorite coaching pictures ever.
What game was that?
I believe that was Batesville. I believe it was the first game
Week
of the
one,
season.
Huh?
Yeah, and
I still have nightmares of Batesville.
Well, I do too. I do too, because I remember, and I'll call out Scott Buning at one point after I watched the entire film, and he said, if they can beat us on the fade, they're better than us. And I thought, okay, I'm a young, dumb defensive coordinator. We won't worry about the fade as much. And you know what? They beat us on the fade.
They did.
And but you know what? I went back and watched that film. They were spot on. I mean, it's unreal.
Obviously, it's way off topic, but the thing about that game was, so they got me quick, like twice, mm-hmm. and I knew that. I was like, okay, I got to step it up. And eventually I did. I shut it down until, I swear, that it was the last play of the game where they beat us.
Mm-hmm.
They went to the fade again, and they tried to pick on me. And I swear, I was in the absolute perfect position with my hand where it's supposed to be, and that quarterback, he went where?
he ended up at like an Ivy League school or something.
Yeah.
I can't think of it right now, but it was an Ivy League or something. I mean, it was D1.
He dropped that thing where only his receiver could catch it.
Yeah, it was stupid.
Right.
Like, I remember getting up, and I was like, there's no way he caught that. Mm-hmm. Not possible, because I had it shut down.
Right.
And he did. He just dropped it right in there, and he made a, you know, toe-dragging catch in the end zone and won the damn game. I was like, God.
So, it was a rough start. Yeah. But it is, even in a bad game, and bad, but it is one of my favorite pictures because it looks like, I mean, in the wrong light, it looks like I was the most evil human being there ever was. And there's no doubt, I could get with it back then and get pretty fired up, but that was not one of those moments. But, hey, again, Taylor, thanks for coming down, man. I love having you on.
Thank you.
You're welcome anytime.
Sweet.